That's one key thing. You're moving from teams. You're moving from the sales team to the post-sales team, or onboarding or whatever. And it's different people, but the customer in their mind, they're dealing with one company, so they want a consistent experience. So you need to be able to, smoothen that out as much as possible. And people, a lot of times, make decisions on whether to recommend or whether to come back, or whether to whatever, from not necessarily from the sales process, but from the onboarding process, actually, or the post sales process.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, we're going to have a good discussion today talking about some of the things that are going to help you with both efficiency and effectiveness in your overall sales and marketing in B2B, because we have Mustafa Morsi on the show with us today. Mustafa, welcome.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, before we actually get into this discussion, and we're going to talk about several gaps that you often find, but people kind of have to know a little bit about your background and experience. So if you can please share that, that'd be great.
Yeah. Hey, absolutely. So, obviously Mustafa Morsi here, president of Push Analytics. We're a, B2B and we do B2C as well, digital consultancy, kind of full service firm. We do a lot with helping improve their B2B processes, setting up their CRMs. We're a top 10% HubSpot partner. I personally, before that, was in like the B2B enterprise sales space, did a lot of work there on like the sales and management side, had been in tens of millions of dollars of complex businesses myself. So, know how it goes firsthand, and also, from the setting up and the process side.
Well, and with that background and experience, we're actually going to be talking about changing the game of data-driven marketing and sales in B2B. Now, if you start thinking about that, and oftentimes what you run into and even what you've experienced, firsthand in regards to the experience that you talked about, what are most organizations missing in regards to this?
Yeah, absolutely. And, a lot of times, one of the things people don't really think about that's really, really important is process, right? And there's process in that fills in different aspects of it. I always like to, when we're doing webinars or something, I put in a question like, how do you think your processes are? And it's a little bit of a trick question, because one of the answers is like, we don't have them. And the people who say that, it's like, but everybody has them, right? It's kind of like, when you see somebody on a diet and you're like, I'm not on a diet. And they're like, but you are. It's just what you eat. It's just a matter of, it is what it is. Like, right. You might not be paying attention to it, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. Right. So it's the same thing with process. That's a really important thing to look at. Now, a lot of these gaps can be identified across your business, and there's a few common ones. And mostly they will be in a B2B business, due to the process related issues. So, for example, the first thing is on the lead side, right? If you have leads coming into your website, right, and you got to look at it like from starting from where the customer interfaces with your business and going more in. So if you have leads coming to your website or to your business, a lot of times people will have gaps in that process where things just fall between the cracks. People may have filled out a form, they expressed interest, and there wasn't an automatic response on the form. There wasn't like some sort of action for somebody from sales team or whatever to follow up. Maybe there was on some forms, but there wasn't on other forms. They had a conference, people came to the booth. We didn't have a way to actually send them anything after for us to follow up and keep them engaged. And then the fall between the cracks, right? And that's kind of the first one. And the one that I would say is most immediate if you do have this to fix that, because these are people that are interested. These are people that want to hear about you and your business, and you're not engaging with them, right? So, and we can kind of go through more of these gaps, but these gaps kind of all happen because of process issues. So,
Well, and you just gave an example of one particular type. We have to look at all those potential inputs, even if it's, you know, outbound. So, you know, you talk about outbound, inbound, you know, other types of methods, and then how are we actually looking at that, you know, that whole, you know, interaction and the flow of that interaction. We also know that timing, you know, is a huge issue. So, I mean, if somebody is taking the time to engage with you and is asking and requesting, you know, your response time has, you know, it used to be where it was okay if it was a day or 2 days late, but that's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the first response, you know, or the first one to respond, you know, is going to get, you know, oftentimes the best opportunity.
Absolutely. And one of the things we always thought, that's why the lead management piece that I just mentioned is so important. One of the things, first things we tell people when work with them is make sure all your forms and all the inputs to your business are manned. I mean, you could think of it like if you had a physical store, if you were like a retailer or something and you had a physical store, anytime somebody comes into a door or to an area where they can buy something, there's always going to be somebody at the cashier or somebody at the rack or somebody at the whatever, right? To be able to help the customer, right? You don't want them to come into like a whole section of the store and there's no cashier for like an entire floor and there's nobody there. And they're like, the hell, where am I? Like, right? So you don't want to do that. So it's the same thing with an online business, right? You don't want to have like a phone number that's just hanging there that doesn't really go anywhere and it just like, or rings forever. Or an email inbox that nobody looks at, but it's on the website, but nobody really looks at it. It doesn't go anywhere. That can completely destroy you in front of that customer, right? If they were excited, they're ready, they want to move, and then they send something and email bounces back or it doesn't go through or whatever, then they're like, are these guys even legit? And you just kind of lost them right there.
Well, and what you're talking about is really important when you start looking at the type of business. I mean, if we're talking about B2B high ticket types of businesses, you know, if it's a situation where that response is happening, if you don't, you know, or a request is happening, if you don't respond immediately, oftentimes they represent the 1% of organizations that are ready to buy. There, 99% of the organizations that you have the opportunity, as far as your addressable market is concerned, they're not ready, right? And if it's a really complex sale, you have to help them to become ready and realize that they need to be ready. So there's a lot of strategy elements that are associated with how do I build my process. And I would dare to say what you find is if I have an off-the-shelf mentality for my tech stack, you know, oftentimes there's going to be, that's going to in itself going to be creating a whole lot of gaps. Is that correct?
Exactly. So the thing with the tech stack is it's just tools, right? And that's why the process thing is really important. We'll go through more gaps today. Like there's five key gaps. We went through one. Right? We'll go through more gaps today. And I want to talk more about tech stack. But the thing with the tech stack is it's ultimately a tool, right? Your CRM, which is very, very important in B2B businesses. And we'll talk about more why later. But your CRM is very important. But you know what? Your CRM is a tool. And a tool by itself is not going to help you, you know, be the best you can be if you don't even know how to use it, right? So I do give this example in like trades. If you're like the best, you know, craftsman or tradesman ever, like you work in a trade, you're the best guy or best plumber, best electrician, whatever. And I give you better tools and, you know, I show you how to use them. It will improve your workflow tremendously. But if you don't know anything about the trade and I give you the best possible tools that don't even exist from the future. And I brought them in here and give them to you. It doesn't do anything for you. You don't know what to do with it. It's just a tool. You get to sit there. You might not even use the right tool. It might even hurt you, right? So the same thing with the CRM and your tech stack. And people make that mistake a lot of thinking like, because whatever company is well advertised, you know, just by having that software, our business is going to get that much better. And for B2B businesses, it almost never works that way.
Well, and you know, you talk about processes and people say, well, we really don't have any. Well, if you have an organization of any size, meaning like more than two people, you have multiple processes that are being followed.
Absolutely. And maybe it's a good time to go back and go through some of these gaps that we were saying as well. So, I mean, we talked about the first kind of process where you can imagine you have a gap, which is the lead management side of things. But then, you know, okay, so they move in through that. The next thing where you can have a gap and where we see frequently gaps is the sales process. So, okay, you've gotten the customer in the door. You started talking to him. Sales maybe had a conversation or two with him. Maybe sent them a quote even. But then you know, the sales is busy, you know, your sales department is stretched thin. There's no like set follow-up or no procedure. There's no way for them to track who they quoted. Sometimes you see that, right? Like they maybe they were, you know, getting requests left and right and they sent out a bunch of quotes, but they're all in Outlook or something. And there's no way for them to track who was quoted. There's no way to see that. And then, you know, hey, you tell the sales guy, did you follow up with so-and-so? No. Well, why though? No. Like, you know, what about so-and-so two and so-and-so three and so-and-so four? And it's like, no. But I don't know, I'm busy, I didn't think about it, whatever, right? Or they just don't really have an answer because it's not their fault, but there's not like set process where it's like, okay, we quoted these many people. We should follow up with, you know, if it's been a week or two or three or whatever it is, like depending on what makes sense for your sales cycle, we should follow up. And following up is very important, right? Ultimately, I used to think like, why is follow up important? Like, what do you have to follow up with people? Like, you know, but actually following up by itself is really, really important. Like if you're in sales and you did sales, I mean, this was before I was in sales, but if you're in sales and you did sales, you understand that following up is very, very, very key in and of itself. Yes, people want things and yes, people will reach out when they want things, but people are also busy and, you know, it's kind of the onus on the sales people and to do that. I remember going off on a little tangent here, but there was a customer, somebody who was a potential customer of another business, and we were just consulting with them, and he was telling me of the software company, and it was actually the better software for him that he really wanted. They gave him a good price, everything was good, and he didn't end up going with them, and he went with much worse software that we were helping him clean up, actually, is why we were consulting him. But anyway, he went with a much worse software, and he was like, you know, I was ready, he gave me a good price, but the guy didn't follow up. I didn't buy it. It was the most like honest time I ever heard it. I was like, okay. I mean, like, it's a very interesting thing. I guess he just kind of forgot or got busy. And he's like, if the guy followed up, I was going to buy it. And he was very like, and it would have helped him a lot at that point. So following up is very, very key. Having your sales process lined up, and that's a big gap where you can see everything. You can see, hey, we quoted these 10, 20 people. Hey, Winnie, I need to follow up with these 10, 20 people. Can really increase your throughput there.
Well, and even when you're talking about that, I start thinking about the whole forecasting and how people may actually put, you know, confidence levels within, you know, these certain projects and say, hey, I'm 90% certain that one's going to close. It's like, how do you know that?
Yeah. That's a whole. Yeah. Forecasting is an interesting topic. And even a lot of people at the corporate levels don't necessarily love it because it's like very janky kind of by definition, right? I mean, you have to just attribute some arbitrary number to like each stage, but the way you can kind of do it is based on like historical data. Like one way to do it is it's like, okay, and this is why, by the way, like one thing that's really, really important about process two is that in order to run a business efficiently, you need data. But with a B2B business, a little bit different than a B2C, but to have that data, you actually need to have good processes, because otherwise you won't even have that data. Because a lot of the interaction in B2B businesses, there's a lot of human interaction, right? I mean, if you have like an e-commerce store and you sell like t-shirts or something, there's almost like no human interaction, right? I mean, you might email support and be like, my shirt is messed up, and you send them a new one, right? But the human interaction is very low. So you can kind of get away with just logging things, you know, through software, and that's it, right? There is no, you don't need a process to have data. You might have some data, might be able to get better, but you might have some data even if your processes aren't like super great. But with B2B, that's not the case, right? Because a lot of human interaction, like how do you know that John sent out the quote unless he marks it or there's something in the quoting system? But he still has to go to a quoting system and send out a quote. If John didn't use the quoting system and called the customer and told them the number, well, you're not gonna know, right? So like it's really important to have these processes in place so that you have data, right? And where I was going with that is for forecasting, I mean, that could be one way to do it, is if you know that, like, okay, in the past, so we have a report that shows of the people that became, of the people that we sent out quotes, we typically are able to close 25% of them, right, for example. So you can use that as like a forecasting, okay, so I can assume that all my quotes and just hit up with a 25%, and that's my forecast, like roughly. Again, I think there's flaws to that, but I think if you did want to do it, that would be like the most logical way to do it, you know, depending on your organization. But
We could have all the the processes built. We can have documented. We can have SOP, standard operating procedures, SOPs. We could have all of those things. But then there's this whole human, adherence and quality, component that has to be put in place as well. And I have had some discussions with sales leaders, and I ask questions about the whole consistency piece, and people adhering and following a practice that we know is effective. And oftentimes they're like, well, they just kind of do different things. And I'm like, oh, that.
Yeah.
Well, so then therefore, why do you think you have some people who are doing well and some people who are not? And there's this big wide range gap is because you haven't created an opportunity for some consistency.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting balance for sure. Sales is a very dynamic, especially B2B sales is a very dynamic field. I mean, every person, like a lot of sales is like, person to person communication, and every person has a different way of communicating just by nature, right? People, and every person has different skill sets. Like, like when I worked in sales, for example, I mean, there was wildly different personalities that were still successful, but in different ways. So somebody might've been, maybe they're a little bit more technical, but they really can go in and dive into the projects with the customer and help them. It was like a very complex sale, and help them engineer the project more, whatever. Or maybe they weren't that technical, but they had like good follow-up skills or good relationships with the customers or good like communications to the customers that kind of really liked working with them. And then they patched in the technical holes elsewhere, right? So you had like wildly different personalities that could work on both ends. So it's interesting to balance where it's like, you want to have the process that kind of lays things out for people and gives them, gives them the right framework to be successful consistently. But you also don't want to inhibit your salespeople and micromanage them and basically say that you have to do this exactly this way. Like if you call the customer, the first sentence you have to say must be this. I mean, that's something ridiculous, right? But stuff like that is like, then you're actually potentially inhibiting them. And, when I mentioned the wildly divergent personalities, they both can be successful. If you force them all to be the same, well, half of them won't be, because now that you're asking them to do so, to work in a way that is just incongruent with who they are. Whereas otherwise they could have, right? So it's kind of a balance where you want to definitely account for what, for giving them that framework, for giving them that information, for having like a framework that they can work within that's consistent across the organization and factors in best practices, but at the same time, not completely shut them off from like their individuality as well.
I mean, what I hear you saying is that we have to have a framework that enables flexibility in the human.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
But allows us as a business to have visibility and consistency.
Exactly. And those are the best types of, process implementations, right? Because a lot of times what you have is, you might have somebody who maybe does the process that doesn't take any input from the people who are actually going to be using the process, like the reps, and who doesn't really know, that was never in sales themselves or whatever. You see this a lot in even big orgs where so-and-so came from wherever, but he came from, this guy used to work at a bank or at a whatever, or like, he was like a big XYZ, which is fine. But then he's in charge of making sales processes. But why does that qualify him to do this? It might, but it doesn't necessarily. And if they don't take an input from the people who are going to be using the process, you oftentimes will end up with a process that nobody wants to use and doesn't even make sense. Or sales like, salespeople will kind of just sit there and laugh, be like, wait, do you know like what it even is like to sell one thing? Like if you don't, like this whole thing doesn't work. And then they kind of just do like this and just toss it, right? And that's it. They're like, and that happens a lot, or they'll say garbage in, garbage out, and they'll just kind of play along to get it done. And that's a big problem, especially in larger orgs, where, they might think they're moving the process along, but they could be doing a lot better by really factoring in something that makes sense from the perspective of the users and also gives the business what it needs to function. It's finding that balance is very, very key. And if you don't, I think sometimes you end up with something that's worse than not having an organized process, which is you actually have a process that literally feeds you the wrong information because people are just, they're just kind of going along with it, but they're not really using it. I mean, people just check the boxes on the forums to move to the next thing because they need to get the quote out, but they just kind of make up whatever. And you know, and then you're making decisions that you at the higher level are really confident about, but they're actually based on things that aren't even true. So it can be actually worse than not having an organized process sometimes if you don't account for this.
Well, and so I think what you're saying is the whole, you know, data-driven marketing and sales in B2B is something that, you know, is an opportunity, but should not be a control mechanism.
Yes, I think that's a good way. I think that's a good way to say it. Definitely, I mean, you want to control for some things, but at the more at the organ, like at the organizing level. So, you know, there should be no reason why I don't have visibility or why a rep doesn't have visibility to like all the quotes that they sent, for example. That, you know, they should be able to just have an easy way where they can go and, you know, put them and look at them, right? And it has other benefits as well besides just data. I mean, it's also transferability. So if one rep is out, vacation, family, emergency, they had a kid, whatever, then if you don't have any like good organized process, ends up being a complete mess if they're out for anything more than like a day, right? It's like somebody else has to back them up, but then that person has no idea what they were doing. That things are just going to fall between the cracks left and right. And there's no like real way. Like, you know, they might sit down and meet before, but if it was an emergency, maybe they didn't even have time to do that. And if they met, they're not going to remember to go through everything. They might go through like, he might just be like, here are the top two projects I'm working on, but he's actually working on 20. Well, what about the other 18? And then what if they come in? What do we do? It ends up being a complete mess, right? So when you have it organized, and it allows for transferability. So there's some key things that you want to make sure you have. You also want to show the reps why it's helpful for them. So like in that example I gave, it's like, you know, it's really helpful for you too. When you go on vacation, you don't have to worry about it anymore because the other person will just go in and see what's assigned to you and boom, you're done. You don't have to talk too much. You don't have to do it, right? So when you show people kind of what it's in for them as well, they get pretty excited about, more excited, I'd say, more excited about doing it. So
yeah, that's the whole buy-in piece. You know, how do you actually create buy-in so people change their behaviors? Okay, so we got gaps in lead management, gaps in the sales process. And then another gap you talk about is in between sales and post sales. That's oftentimes a gap you see. Explain that.
Yeah. Yes. A lot of times, if I had a PowerPoint up here, I'd show something like we had the sales process and we got the customer, and then we're done, right? Let's party. Let's throw up the confetti. Well, we're not, right? You know, we're definitely not. And that's kind of where things begin. And that point right there between sales and post sales, whether it's onboarding or whatever, fulfillment, whatever, you see a lot of friction there. It's just not something people pay attention to, but then there's a lot of friction there. And that's a huge opportunity boost for people. I mean, there's simple examples, you know, I like to give, like, you know, you work, let's say, at a B2B software company, and, you know, the onboarding rep is talking to the customer and they're like, hey, well, customer's like, well, John in sales said I got like 2 free months. And then the rep is like, I don't know. And then they have to kind of like drop everything. I have to go find John. John's busy doing a million things. Takes like, you know, and John's like, I don't know. And John's like pulling up through a pile of paper. And he's like, dude, I don't know what. And he's like throwing. And then like half a day later, John comes back and he's like, dude, I told him 10% and we already gave it to him. And then the service rep wasted the whole day doing this. He has to go back to the customer a day later, tell him an answer that he doesn't want to hear. And then everybody's pissed off, right? Like John's pissed that he had to deal with this whole thing. The service rep is really annoyed that he had to like kill a whole day and destroy his workflow to do that. And the customer had to wait a day to get an answer that was like a non-answer. Whereas if you had like an actual organized process and all this, the rep had to do was go in and access some of the information, that maybe the notes that John had put, and it said, oh yeah, I see on the phone. He'd just be like, oh, good news, I see you 10%, we already applied it to your account. The sales guy didn't even know about it. Rep didn't have to stop the call. You know, the customer is like decently happy because at least they got a quick answer and life moves on. And this is based on a real example, but this happens a lot, and you can multiply this times, you know, in one organization, times 10, times 20, times 30, times 40, and you can see easily how much time and resources you're completely bleeding. And then also how much of a worse or better experience it is for the customer, right? Because they want a consistent experience. That's one key thing. You're moving from teams. You're moving from the sales team to the post-sales team or onboarding or whatever. And it's different people, but they, the customer in their mind, they're dealing with one company. So they want a consistent experience. So you need to be able to, you know, smoothen that out as much as possible. And people, a lot of times, you know, make decisions on whether to recommend or whether to come back, or whether to whatever, from not necessarily from the sales process, but from the onboarding process, actually, or the post sales process.
And you bring up a really interesting point. So there is some research that is that came out, and specifically in the book Jolt Effect, that was written by Matt Dixon. They talk about most deals actually being lost to no decision in B2B, not to competition, and it's well over 60%. Of most, you know, B2B deals, when you look across the entire gambit, all across all different industries. And so if you think about that, and then start interpreting that data, there's, you know, some, you know, key elements that are reasons why, but ultimately it comes back to the people who are in on the decision committee, or, you know, the person who potentially championed your product and service is, you know, they're worried about, is this going to work? Right.
Right.
That onboarding process component, you know, is vital, because they're worried. Okay. They went ahead and made a decision, but they're still worried about that whole particular process. And if you have gaps in that, it's going to confirm their worry.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And it's, and actually the other way around too, because if your onboarding process is stellar, well, then they're going to go to their friends and their peers and other organizations. I mean, people usually have friends in the same industry or, you know, different orgs. And yeah, I did with this company, their onboarding, I was worried about it, but you know what? Their onboarding just was super, super good. Their fulfillment. Again, we're using the word onboarding. It might be, depending on what organization you are, it might be a little different. It might be the fulfillment. It might be project management, right? Like, you know, when I was in construction, you sold a project. And, you know, it was a big project, whatever. And actually the work just started, because there was project management side of things where you had to work on, you had somebody else, another team that worked on fulfilling the order. So depending on the industry, we're just on post sales in general, but the general principles apply. But yeah, I mean, giving them that stellar experience helps. And also, one thing that can help too, depending on the business, is you can actually forecast, you can actually announce it, sorry, in advance. So essentially, if you're on the sales side and you have a really good onboarding process, you can tell them, like, look, if you end up working with us, you know, we have an amazing process, and here's what we do, and, you know, here's the things that we can do. And then that makes them feel more comfortable. To your point, Jim, if that was something at the back of their mind, like, hey, is this going to work? Well, that makes them feel more comfortable. Well, you know what? This might actually work. You know, that's huge too.
Well, and reality is, you need to, so you need to do that, and it needs to be part of your sales playbook, and it needs to happen early. So if you look at the traditional, you know, sales playbook and processes, oftentimes it doesn't cover what we're talking about. But we have to address that worry that's inside their mind. So the table stakes have significantly raised, and why that no decision loss is so high, you know, is because of this worry piece. People's reputation is on the line. Maybe the livelihood of their people is on the line. They're not dealing with their money. It's the company's money. All of these particular factors cause a whole lot of, you know, apprehension, worry, and anxiety. And the more that you can address that, you know, in the early stage, it's going to help you actually move down that buyer journey a lot faster.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it just realizing the importance of the, you know, service or postal order team or whatever is super key. And not everybody does. I mean, we used to have like kind of a saying that like the sales team gets you the first order, but the service team gets you the repeat orders, right? Like you're not going to, you know, they're not going to come back. I mean, you know, again, where I was doing sales, they're just not going to come back. They had a horrible experience with the order. Nothing shipped on time. The wrong stuff shipped. You know, the communication was horrible with the, you know, project manager. They're not coming back. It doesn't matter. They're not going to come back. You can give it away for free the next time. They won't come back. So it's very, very important to recognize that and understand that process and that team also is a big contributor to sales in the long run, like not in the immediate term, right? But in the long run, they are. And I think that's why people maybe don't pay attention to it, because they kind of think, like, well, we have the numbers, we have the sales, like, whatever. But that's not the case.
You know, and there, you talk about what one of the things that you, you know, think about in regards to that. One of the things that, you know, I was exposed to is being able to understand, are we overpromising in the sales process and causing us to be able to underdeliver in the servicing process or onboarding process? So are we overpromising and underdelivering? That gap, you know, is a really important one in B2B. Okay, so we got a lead management gap, sales process gap, in between sales and post-sales process gap. And then you talk about the gaps between the actual onboarding process and the servicing process. Explain that a little bit.
Yeah. So just in general, I mean, you have the immediate post-sales gap and then just servicing in general, right? So people after that support, let's call it support, right? So any the support gap. Because once you've delivered the product or, you know, fulfilled the project or onboarded the software, you know, again, depending on the business. So now they're using it. They got kind of past that initial hurdle, but there's going to be like service issues that come up, right? Like, hey, my software isn't working, or hey, my, you know, the product you shipped, there's an issue with one item or whatever, right? Or this, you know, we need help. We need to add stuff to this project. That's like kind of the support side. And the support side, I mean, again, it comes down to the same principle of like, they expect that they're dealing with one organization, but it is different people because you're technically the salespeople, then the onboarding people are usually different, you know, and then the support people are usually different. But they expect that they're dealing with the same organization. So if you don't have that continuity, then it ends up being like, a lot of times people be like, how many times have you heard people be like, so-and-so company's support is useless, right? Because they don't have context, they don't know anything about you. Again, you don't have to know the person, but like, they're, you call them, they're completely clueless. You give them your info. They, even like as a consumer, you give them their info and it's like, dude, do you even have me in your system? Because like, it seems like you don't know anything, right? And I keep getting answer these basic questions. Or you call to log a complaint. They don't store it anywhere. You call again. They're like, well, tell me what happened. And you find yourself, I just found this situation, you know, a couple weeks ago or something, where I was dealing with that. And it's like the fifth time that I'm explaining the same thing. Like, at some point, like, you got to have written it somewhere. You have to have a system where there's a continuity. And it was a decent sized org too, that in that case, but yeah, very, very important. And honestly, more important in B2B organizations, because in B2B, I mean, a lot of times it's something that they're using to run their business in some way or to deliver their own business in some way. But then the other thing is, they often need, and or depending on what it is, expect a little bit of a higher level of service, depending on what it is, because, you know, it's a usually a higher ticket purchase, and it's something more intricate than, you know, something that you would just buy off the shelf as a consumer, right? So it's very, very important to have that like level of continuity. And I think a lot of companies don't, you know, and you see it a lot, and you can just think of examples in your head, and you probably realize it happens a lot more often than you think, now that I mentioned it.
Well, and that's what, you know, causes, you know, that whole retention problem that you had referred to earlier. Okay. So then our final gap is a marketing attention gap. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So marketing kind of wraps this whole thing, you know, around across, right? I know when me and you were talking before, one of the things that I was mentioning was the, in a B2B business, I mean, marketing and sales have to work really close together. There's a lot of like blur between them, right? Because again, there's just a lot of interaction that needs to happen, and you need to be capturing the attention of the prospect kind of throughout the cycle. So a big gap is, you know, failing to do that. So if somebody fill out a form, and in that form they expressed interest in, you know, whatever product or whatever thing, and you didn't do anything with it, right? Well, but that's a gap, right? Because they might have told you like, hey, and then we were working with like accountants once, and it's like, hey, they might have told you like, hey, we're really interested in hearing about like corporate tax law. And it's like, you know, hey, there's a change in the law. Like, you should be sending them a notification, keeping them top of mind, keeping that attention going. They're like, oh shoot, yeah, I remember these people. I actually had a really good conversation with the sales guy, but I forgot. And then they kind of like re-engage, right? Each one of the processes that we mentioned could tie into marketing. You know, if a lead comes in and they went to sales, great. But if they didn't, you should send them straight to marketing, and they should be getting like relevant communication to keep their attention, because they have already given you a piece of their attention. So now you want to keep that and grow that, right? On the sales side, you know, again, if they fail to buy or something, or they just, it's not the time or whatever, you should keep them and have like a certain marketing strategy there, because again, you want to keep their attention, keep them engaged, so that when they are ready, when the next budget comes around or whatever, they're like, oh yeah, I remember these guys. And then they kind of jump in and jump back in. On the onboarding side, you want to keep their attention, but a little bit of a different way. You want to be sending them, I mean, it's kind of a hybrid onboarding marketing feature, but you want to be sending them kind of relevant material, like, you know, here's best practices for, you know, again, our software, our product or whatever. Here's like how to handle, you know, the items you receive. Here's like some key things. Here's frequently asked questions. You want to be giving them, like, getting as much of their attention as possible, getting them to kind of be like, wow, this is an amazing product. I want to use it. I want to recommend it and want to do it further. So it's very, very key across all the processes to patch in these marketing gaps. There's these attention gaps with marketing. And that's not even including, obviously, like just cold marketing where you're bringing in people through marketing. But I'm talking about people that are already in your business flow. It's really important to keep their attention going.
Okay. So we talked about changing changing the game in regards to data-driven, you know, marketing and sales and B2B, but we've been talking a whole lot about, you know, process. So should I interpret that the key to get visibility in your business is to make sure that your processes enable you to understand what is going on across this entire continuum? For me, I talk about revenue experience. An organization has a revenue experience. And there's really three core bedrock pillars that are part of that revenue experience. What am I experiencing in regards to revenue? And that is the prospect experience, the sales experience, and then the customer experience. And if I don't have visibility into all of that and the data into the business and across all of that, it's going to impact my revenue.
Right. No, and absolutely. And it's in B2B business, and you mentioned we were talking about process a lot, but in B2B business, I'd say there's three things that are kind of intertwined, three core pillars that are intertwined that are really important that they work together. So we actually hit on two of them, but it's the process, the technology, the tech stack or the tools, right? And the data. And those three things kind of tie together in like a bit of a triangle, because you need them all to be able to work together. So for you to have data in a B2B type environment, you need to have a good process where that data is even available somewhere, but then you need to store that data somewhere. So that's usually the technology stack. And then you can pull that data and use it because you have it from that. But then it goes also the other way, right? Because then you start getting the data. So the process too is not, it's not a static thing, right? You start getting the data and then you're like, okay, well, oh wow, we now have the data, but it turns out, wow, we quoted 1,000 people. That's pretty good. We got 10 orders. Wow, that's pretty bad. Like, well, why? And then you sit there and identify where exactly are people falling off and like, okay, let's follow. Oh, they're falling off at the follow-up stage, even though we follow up once, but they're following up. Maybe we need to follow up more. And then you kind of test that. And then you're like, okay, we were able to bring that up from a 1% close rate from quote to like a 3% rate. Okay, what else can we do? And then you keep iterating through these three things, right? Because again, the data then is going to inform your process. And then the process is going to make you change something on the tech side to help enable whatever process you decided. That's going to give you more data. And then you're going to go back and you're going to do it again, right? So these three things work, you know, crucially together in a B2B business to help you drive that success. So when we say data-driven, there's no way you have data-driven if you don't have good processes. There's just no way. If all your salespeople are just, you know, handing out things on paper, for example, and well, where's the process, right? Like, how do you keep track of what they quoted? How do you keep track of what they have in? How are you able to have these numbers if you don't have a good way of tracking?
And then, like we said, in order to be able, you know, to have a glue that puts this all together, is we have to go through some change management activity and change people's behaviors and how they interact with all of this.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, usually like when we're doing any type of process work or project work or tech stack work, I mean, it's there's different components to it that all kind of have to happen. So, I mean, the first is you have to understand where the business is now. So I always tell people like, look, tell us where you are now. It doesn't matter. Like, you could be having some really sophisticated stuff that you're trying to improve or even simplify, or you could be like, we write our stuff on a napkin and we give it to the customer and that's our quote. Like, right. I mean, and there's no wrong answer, right? But we have to know You know, like you go to the doctor, he needs to know where you are now. It's not, you know, hey, I need to, you know, shave this much off, whatever number, like, you know, he needs to know where you are now so he can help you get to where you're going. So it's the same thing. You know, we've kind of find out, where are you now? Where do we want to get to? And then let's come up with like a plausible way to get there through process, you know, map that out, understand what we want to do, bring in some key stakeholders and people who are going to be using the process to get their color and their opinion on that. Cause again, a lot of times in sales might throw in some good insight, like, oh yeah, but like, honestly, there's no way we're going to close anything following up once. We actually have to follow up three times. And maybe you built the process like with reminders or something to follow up once. So it's okay. Like let's do that. So you get that done. And then, so the first, that's kind of the first part is understanding where the business is and where it wants to go. The second part is building out some of these processes and involving the stakeholders and the users. The third part is then the tech stack work, right? So now, okay, what do we need to do in the tech stack in order to get this to work? So that's the third part. We have to have this CRM with this features. You know, we have to have, you know, this level of subscription. We have to have these people on it. We have to implement these automations, whatever, right? So the third part is the tech stack work. And then the last part is the buy-in and the training. So you never want to do this without having like training regimen for the people that are going to be using it, to be able to show them like, hey, this is what we did. This is how things are different now. And since you've already, you know, done the planning and done the mapping before, kind of show them like, this is how the process works. This is how the tool works. This is how you can like jump in and start doing things. So these four things, are key together. And you can't, like, we never, ever do process work without having at least like one training, like, right, as just part of it, because it's just very important to jumpstart things and get things going.
Well, and if we're talking about behavior change, one will never cut it. Mustafa Moore, great conversation. How does the BDM gang get in touch with you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if anybody here listening to this podcast would like to get in touch, just email us at hello@pushanalytics.com and just say, you know, you want to put the B2B gang or whatever in the title, if you want to put that in, just put that in, and you know, the team will know to basically send them my way, and if you have questions or something, we're happy to hop on a call and help you out.
Mustafa Morrissey, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.